Welcome to CICK News, the only news source in the North truly dedicated to local stories on the ground. CICK News addresses the diverse needs of the underserved communities between Burns Lake and Haida Gwaii through firsthand stories and in-depth interviews. CICK News funding is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially support campus and community radio stations in Canada, as well as the Government of Canada. We are your hosts, Pam Hassan and Dan Messick, and we are on the dial at 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. Our call letters are CICK, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com, or follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Smithers Community Radio. If you've been paying attention to the provincial reports on weather this year, 2023 has been the highest year for avalanche potential since 2003. A BC Coroner's report from 1996 to 2014 shows that in the years 2003 and again in 2009, deaths by avalanche increased by 60% from the next highest year, resulting in 25 and 24 people losing their lives in each respective year. It was because of that devastating year in 2003 that formed the organization Avalanche Canada Foundation, a federally registered charity that supports the work of avalanche forecasting, as well as safety tools and resources. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Emily Jones, an avalanche field technician working in British Columbia's Northwest region. Avalanche Canada works closely with Environment Canada to collect information about weather patterns that help to forecast the potential of an avalanche, but they also collect data about the forecast by people like Emily, who make up the field teams. Guiding operations, such as cat skiing outfits or heli skiing, are also instrumental in informing Avalanche Canada with up-to-date reports on snow conditions in the backcountry, as well as recent avalanche action. Emily and I talked about the purpose of Avalanche Canada and what goes into forecasting potential avalanches. She also shares the free tools and online tutorials available on Avalanche Canada's website, and what the most important tools any backcountry adventure seeker needs if they plan to explore the beautiful mountain ranges that surround us. Later in the episode, I'm also sharing a conversation I had with Christoph Dietzfelbinger, an experienced mountain guide who's been breaking trail across the Bulkley Valley and beyond for over 40 years. Christoph was generous enough to speak to me about the psychological side of experiencing avalanches, as well as the team dynamic of mountaineering. He also shared his ideas of what the most useful tools a backcountry skier needs, especially in case of an avalanche.
Yeah, so I'm Emily Jones. I'm one of the three members of the Avalanche Canada field team based here in Smithers. We cover the whole northwestern region, so mostly operating out of Smithers and covering all the backcountry skiing and snowmobiling areas here. But also we go to Terrace and cover everything as far north as Telegraph Creek in our forecasting area. Obviously from my accent, you can tell that I'm from New Zealand, but I've been doing back-to-back winters for sort of the last 10 years working as a forecaster and an avalanche technician in New Zealand, Canada, the USA, and in Japan. All predominantly Avalanche Canada staff all have their avalanche operations level 2 qualification and a big depth of experience either from ski patrol and guiding or other avalanche work.
What does Avalanche Canada do?
So our mission statement is to promote to engage people in and promote safe recreational backcountry travel in Canada in the winter. And so that involves producing the backcountry avalanche forecast for all of our different areas, and then also doing education and outreach. So we provide courses for recreational backcountry users so that they can get the training to get out safely into the backcountry in winter. And then our field teams do outreach and kind of organize and build community in those different regions that we're operating in.
If you're a backcountry skier, snowboarder, or I guess even snowmobiler as well, what do you need to know and what training do you need to have to be prepared before you go out there into the backcountry, especially in the Bulkley Valley here?
Yeah, that's great. So we talk about get the gear, get the training, and get the forecast. So whether you're skiing, snowmobiling, snowboarding, or even snowshoeing and ice climbing, in the winter in the backcountry, it's really important that you not only have the correct gear, so that would be a transceiver, shovel, probe, but that you also have the training and know how to use it. So importantly, knowing how to use that avalanche rescue equipment, like your transceiver, shovel, and probe, and then also knowing how to identify avalanche terrain and signs of avalanche instability, so signs that there might be a problem around. And then the final step in that is getting the forecast, so from our website or from the app.
Now, for the average skier, like at Hudson Bay or Shames or Hart, what should they know about avalanche safety?
Even when you're skiing at the ski area, there's still things that you could do to keep yourself and your friends safe. You know, there's lots of other hazards out there when we're skiing or riding. So, you know, using the same principles that we use in the backcountry, riding with a buddy, communicating well, making sure that somebody knows your plan if you're skiing by yourself, all things like that are good ways to keep yourself safe.
Mm-hmm. And then I read an article that said that Avalanche Canada warns that this year might be difficult, might be a difficult year for avalanches in BC due to the layers of snowpack. So could you just describe why this year might be a higher risk for backcountry skiers?
Yeah, absolutely. So this year we had cold and dry conditions, a drought in the earlier part of the season and around Christmas. And this forms a persistent weak layer or weak crystals at the base of the snowpack. And then those have now become buried by further snowfall. And we are seeing significant avalanches failing on those weak sugary crystals that we call facets that are now buried at the bottom of the snowpack. And avalanche professionals have been comparing this year to 2003, which was a really bad year for avalanches in Western Canada and was the impetus for Avalanche Canada forming and starting the Backcountry Avalanche Forecast. And something that's important with the conditions this year mm-hmm. is that normally we recommend that people look for signs of instability when they go out. And with those persistent slab avalanches or those weak layers that are buried in the snowpack, we often don't have good clues for instability. Like we won't see cracking or whomping, and the first sign of the instability might be a serious or a high consequence avalanche. So that's why right now we're recommending kind of a higher level of caution or committing to less consequential terrain.
Okay,
using
yeah.
Consequence terrain to travel in.
Is that something that Avalanche Canada would supply for backcountry skiers, like letting them know what's less consequential terrain, or does
yeah.
that just come with experience? Oh, okay, yep. Can you tell me about
Definitely.
That?
Definitely. It does a little bit, like recognizing avalanche terrain is probably the most important part of our training programs that we do run. But there are other great tools on our website or on other third-party apps that people can use to find out whether they're in low or high consequence terrain. We use the terms simple, challenging, and complex terrain. And that's our avalanche terrain exposure scale. And on the Avalanche Canada website, there's a trip planning tool, and a lot of popular areas are already mapped into simple, challenging, and complex terrain. So people can look, and simple is mapped as green on the map. And people can use that to plan their trip or to navigate.
What would be some signifiers that you'd be in an area that might be more subject to an avalanche?
Yeah, so some signs of instability that people can look out for include recent avalanche activity, particularly avalanches that have occurred in the last 48 hours. They can look out for whomping, which is a collapse of the snowpack, shooting cracks that appear in the snow under your skis or your sled. And they can also look for signs of rapid warming, which can indicate instability. So snow shedding from the trees or tree bombing or snow pinwheeling or snowballing down the slopes. That's super helpful. Yeah, we have a platform called the Mountain Information Network, which is a platform that the public can access on our website. We call it the MIN. But yeah, that's where we ask public to share their observations. And even if you don't feel like you have a high technical knowledge related to avalanche, a picture tells 1,000 words. So we really appreciate it, especially if you're seeing recent or running avalanches, or those other signs of instability that I mentioned.
Yeah, and I guess the ubiquity of cell phones and people being able to access and upload that, especially compared to, let's say, 20 years ago in 2003, must have made a pretty big difference in, I guess, maybe the time, the time changeover from getting that information to being able to share that information as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just helps us make the forecast more timely and accurate.
So what are some areas in the Bulkley Valley that have been experiencing avalanche activity this year?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. There have been several persistent slab avalanches triggered by skiers in the Bulkley Valley over the last week. So today, Monday, the 23rd of January, and just yesterday, there was a remotely triggered avalanche triggered by some skiers at Four Lakes, which is in the Babine Mountains. And this was triggered from a commonly traveled gully feature, and was estimated to be up to 80 centimeters deep. And then on Saturday, there was a skier triggered persistent slab avalanche near Kispiox that failed 60 centimeters deep and stepped down to a deeper buried weak layer that's 80 centimeters deep. And that layer is what we suspect to be the December 23rd layer of facets, which are those weak sugary crystals that form during the dry spell. This group in particular, they were lucky not to be caught or buried by this avalanche, as one skier was carried a short way down the mountain by the slide. So yeah, we really thank these people for sharing their observations, and we suggest extra caution at this time.
Emily, is there anything that I didn't ask about that you think is important for people to know before they go into the backcountry, or if they're maybe even considering starting backcountry skiing, snowboarding, snowshoeing, anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I would first and foremost say get the gear, get the training, and then get the forecast from our website. But when you are traveling in avalanche terrain, there's several good habits that you can use to reduce your exposure to avalanche hazard. And that's things like using good communication, stopping at key decision points, especially if you're on a snowmobile where it's difficult to communicate as you're riding around and moving a lot faster with all the noise. We suggest going one at a time through avalanche terrain so you're not exposing your whole group at once, and selecting safe spots and escape routes before you do commit to a slope. And then, yeah, we really recommend using terrain wisely. So traveling on gentle slopes through dense trees and along ridges or rib lines, and avoiding overhead hazard or terrain traps.
Okay, excellent. I guess last thing, was there anything about Avalanche Canada that you want more people to know?
Just that we have a huge variety of different tools and information, really good learning packages available on the website. So there's everything from how to interpret a weather forecast to our online tutorials. Avi Savvy is one of them. That's a great place to start if you'd just like to do a free introductory course. That's available on the website. And we also run webinars on a bi-weekly basis, so you can tune into those live. It's free to sign up online, or you can watch the recorded sessions that have already been for the season. So we have two great webinars that just ran over the last few weeks, choosing terrain for skiers and choosing terrain for snowmobilers, which are available on our website that you can watch at any time.
That's really awesome that you offer those for free as well, because I think hopefully money would not be a barrier from someone being able to enjoy and appreciate this beautiful
Absolutely.
part of the country that we live in. But that's so great that you offer that for free.
Yeah, and there are also grants and scholarships that Avalanche Canada offer that you can find on the website for people looking to take their training a little further.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
That's great.
and if people are interested in following us on social, our field team that's based here in Smithers, we're at Avalanche Canada Northwest, Facebook and Instagram. We post kind of frequent updates when we're out and about in the local backcountry. You can see what's going on and hopefully see some fun educational content too.
Yeah. Well, Emily, thank you so much for giving me the time and speaking with me today. This has been really informative, and I really hope that this kind of helps. I hope that this helps a few skiers out there, if they didn't already know about it, or encourages people who want to start backcountry skiing to do it safely.
Yeah, no worries. It was great talking to you too. I hope so.
Thank you so much to Emily and Avalanche Canada for setting up the interview. If you want to check them out online on Instagram, they are AvCanNW for Northwest on Instagram and Facebook. Now here's my conversation with Christoph Dietzfelbinger.
My name is Christoph Dietzfelbinger. I'm a mountain guide and avalanche professional. I live and work on the Wet'suwet'en territories, live in the Bulkley Valley, and operate a backcountry lodge on Tsayu territory and the Housen Range.
Okay, so you became a mountain guide in 1981?
Yes.
What are the factors that led to that profession?
I needed a way to make a living without being a high school teacher.
What motivated you to explore backcountry skiing?
It was just what you did in the winter. I was more of a rock climber for many years. And backcountry skiing is mountaineering in the winter, in the Alps anyway. In the Alps, the snow isn't like it's here often. And so I was not the greatest skier until I became a mountain guide and had to.
Okay. How do the mountains of northern BC compare to other mountains that you've explored, including the Alps?
They're very different. It took me a long time to realize just that they are very different. Mm-hmm. And the Alps have their character, their history, their aspects, and so do these mountains. Mm-hmm. And it took me many years to become at home in these mountains.
So is there something that you wish more people knew or understood or researched before they went backcountry skiing in the mountains of the Bulkley Valleys?
That's a difficult question. Very hard to say that, really. It would be good if people get trained and acquired knowledge before going. But I'm not talking so much about the technical aspects of backcountry skiing, although of course those are important. It's a good idea to be a competent skier or boarder before going in the backcountry. It's also a good idea to learn about the winter mountains, which are a complex and dynamic place. Snow avalanches are only one of the hazards in the winter mountains. What I think would benefit people most is if they reflected and learned about the way they make decisions, about whether they go or don't go, who they follow or not follow, how a group decides their objective and how they're going to get there. When you analyze mountain accidents, sure, there is a danger, a hazard, right? A rock fall or a snow avalanche or things like that. But in almost all cases, it's the decisions that people make that get them in contact with that hazard. And quite often, there are obvious signs that things aren't so good. Mm-hmm. But there are powerful social and psychological factors that make us go anyway.
What are some of the signs?
Oh, well, when it comes to snow avalanches, are there recent avalanches? Mm-hmm. Has it snowed recently? Has there been wind? Is the temperature warming up? Those are pretty obvious signs that point toward increased danger. So those things would be relatively easy to notice, but it's much more difficult to say, well, you know, we got 25 centimeters of new snow. Maybe we shouldn't go where we are planning to go, but somewhere else when you're at the trailhead and everybody's keen to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you had an avalanche experience that fundamentally changed your view on what you do, or shook you to the core, or made you wonder if you still wanted to continue?
No. I have had quite a few encounters with snow avalanches. I've had to dig quite a few people out of the snow. They were all dead. Fortunately, they were never my guests or in my group. I've been very fortunate. But no, that never. I'd have to say that never made me question whether I want to do this or not.
Mm-hmm. When you are taking a group out and you do kind of feel that responsibility to maintain the overall well-being physically but also mentally of people, how are you preparing to manage a group of people that you maybe just met?
That happens all the time. You know, people come to the lodge, mm-hmm. or hire me otherwise, that they don't know me, I don't know them.
Yeah.
I just start slowly on the first day. You know, when people arrive at the lodge, we go for a short trip where I just make sure, okay, everybody has skis and boots and skins and they fit together and people know how to put them on and they can actually move on them. And we do a companion rescue training. And so, you know, you kind of ease into it. And I've done it for a long time, so it's relatively easy to see where people are. And then I have to meet them where they are, of course. Yeah. The Burnie Glacier Chalet attracts stronger skiers. It's demanding terrain. It's not beginner's terrain. But sometimes weaker people show up there, and then you have to make a good experience for them.
Yeah. So you wouldn't turn someone away then if you feel like they that it's going to be particularly challenging for them?
Not generally, no. Mm-hmm. I try to make it clear before they show up that this is a somewhat bigger place and the terrain is somewhat more demanding than in others, and that they need to be reasonably competent on their skis or boards when they show up, and that seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to work. Sometimes you have people who are particularly weak, and then you have to work with that.
Yeah. What are some of the softer skills that you've had to learn and manage when you are dealing with groups, and especially groups in high risk situations as well?
Respect and compassion.
Mm.
That's really the main thing. That because somebody doesn't know anything about the mountains and can't ski does not make them a bad person. They're my guest, and I have to respect them and care for them, just like I have to respect and care for the people who've skied with me for 18 years and are really good.
You mentioned in our pre-interview non-event feedback. Can you tell me what that is?
When you ski terrain and nothing happens, the obvious feedback is that you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're skiing, it's great. You're having the greatest fun and you're skiing steep slopes and all that. What you cannot know, and what is not knowable actually, is whether you were within a hair's breadth of a release or whether you had a lot of leeway. You cannot know that. That's called non-event feedback. The problem with that is that if a person relies on experience, which will contain a lot of non-event feedback, then they will push the envelope because it worked last time, so we wouldn't know a reason why it wouldn't work next time.
Yeah, you hear that when, you know, if people do engage in riskier activities too. It's like, you know, I had done this 1,000 times the same way before, but this time it just happened to not work out. Is there a name for the opposite to non-event feedback? Is there a name for that?
Yeah, but you don't want that.
Right. Yeah.
But when an avalanche releases, then you know that you screwed up. But that's not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm. So if you did have a group and there was an avalanche, then how do you regroup after that? Let's say, hope everyone got out and you're at camp or you returned. What is the process to kind of disseminate what they had just experienced?
That fortunately happens extremely rarely. I'm glad to say that happens very rarely.
Yeah.
But when there is an avalanche incident, obviously, the guide made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
The guide is there to forecast and to determine that no avalanche incidents happen. And it's quite important to own up to that. So yes, I or our team, we usually work in a team, we forecast that wrong. Or we were not where we thought we were. Sometimes we deal with poor visibility. The snow in this particular place was not what we thought it would be. But in mountain guiding, error correction is is a vital skill. Errors are inevitable. They will happen. When you operate in a complex and dynamic environment like the Winter Mountains, errors will happen. And the trick is to commit these errors, but be able to recover from them.
Can you tell when you have a group if someone is maybe seeking out more risk? I'm not saying that anyone's obviously looking to get stuck into an avalanche, but can you kind of tell if someone maybe seems a little more careless or more kind of addicted to that risk?
Very much so.
Yeah.
And we get that. And it can be very challenging, particularly when people do not follow instructions. That can be very challenging.
And those two often go together? Is the person who's seeking risk is someone who doesn't listen to instructions?
Yes. Yeah. We get brilliant skiers, very strong young athletes. You know, they can ski anything.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it is. But they may have very little mountain sense, and to reconcile these things can be very challenging.
Yeah. So what would be the best resources for a backcountry skier, and tools?
Well, the basic tools that are really basic are transceiver, probe, shovel.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody needs to have that. But the tools are totally useless if one doesn't know how to use them.
Yeah.
And the modern tools are very good. Modern transceivers are incredibly easy to use and incredibly accurate and all that. But if one doesn't know how, and particularly if one doesn't know how to do that under stress, they're entirely useless.
Mm-hmm.
Same with probe and shovel. One needs all three tools. The transceiver gets us close to a burial victim. The probe actually finds the burial victim, but the rescue, getting them out of the snow, is done with a shovel, and without a shovel, it's not happening.
Yeah.
So it's a really good idea to learn how to do that. There are several people in this valley who are certified guides and good instructors. My friend Sean Fraser of Highland Backcountry does a lot of instruction, and he's an excellent instructor, very knowledgeable guide. I also instruct, but I do only long courses at Burnie. I feel that in weekend courses, that's just me,
mm-hmm.
I can't really do the subject justice. Well, in a week, being in the mountains, I feel I can do a reasonable job.
Mm-hmm.
There may be others, but Sean is certainly the most active and a very, very good instructor.
Mm-hmm.
I have full confidence in him.
Mm-hmm. So I guess sort of my last question, and this is maybe too personal, you can let me know if it is not, but what would make you stop doing this?
Well, old age might make me stop. otherwise, yeah, I've been very fortunate. I haven't killed anyone. I've been really fortunate. And luck plays a role in that.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. So I've done this for more than 40 years, and I plan to do it as long as I can, but it still works. I can still break trail all day. But obviously that's finite at my age.
Yeah. Christoph, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
I hope it's useful. Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.